Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of our podcast, Beneath Your Skin. This evening, I have a guest with me. Zoe is not here because she is a new mom and the baby demands her whole attention. So, I have a surprise for you. I'm here with William Gray, an horror author, to talk about his first book, The Man Behind the Door. Good evening, William, and thanks to be with us. Please introduce yourself and tell us about your journey and how you created this book.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. So The Man Behind the Door started out of two things. Of course, I always wanted to be a novel, and if you've ever, or a novelist, if you've ever wanted to be an author, you know, obviously that's a big deal. But I would never have climbed this mountain if it hadn't been for my dad. Back in 2018, it was actually the 10th anniversary of his death. I set out to kind of tell his story in a non-biased, but compassionate sort of way. And that's how The Man Behind the Door came to be. The character of Lee Glasscock in the novel is entirely based on him. All the real world stuff that Lee goes through are things that my dad experienced or actually did in his life. And so he was a very complex man. And so I lost him at a young age and I was angry for a long time. And that's pretty common for anybody that loses a parent to suicide at a young age. And so as I've gotten older, though, I've grown to understand him a little bit more. And I wanted to tell his story in its entirety. And so I decided to, you know, put his story through the lens of fiction. And I always say The Man Behind the Door is like 20% nonfiction. It's 80% fiction. But horror has always been my game. It's been my favorite genre always. I love the meta aspect of horror. If horror is done well, it is unparalleled in terms of metaphor and theme, and it just really will connect with people in a different way. And so I've always written in the horror genre, but The Man Behind the Door is my first successfully completed novel. Didn't do anything with it for a long time. I queried a little bit. I did some editing myself, didn't get anywhere with it. And then sometime about halfway through 2019, I just stopped thinking about it. I wrote a second book during that time that I didn't do anything with. And I just said, hey, I had a blast writing two books, and that's enough for me. And it wasn't until about last year, or 2021, it was the end of 2021, I let my now fiance read The Man Behind the Door. And she read it in one night. She's the first person to say, I hate reading. I'm not a reader. She read it in one night. She said, this is absolutely incredible. She was like, you need to do something with it. And so I started querying again, still didn't get anywhere. It's hard now that the market is so saturated, and when you have no credentials, it's, you know, it's just, it's very competitive. So I decided I was going to self-publish, and it's been a wild ride, to say the least. Self-publishing is not for everybody. It's a very intensive, a lot of learning and a lot of trial and error. There's like 10 of my books that exist with a bad cover and bad editing. So someone out there has some very limited edition versions of The Man Behind the Door. But along the way, I've learned so much and I wouldn't change it. And now my next book is going to be traditionally published by a small press, and I'm really excited for that. But I'm not going to turn my back to self-publishing. I think I'm going to, you know, interlace it and do it myself, because there's a lot of benefits to both.
That's amazing. I have to say, I agree with her. I read, I love to read. I love horror. I probably grew up with horror. I read the book in one sitting. I mean, it was so engaging that I couldn't stop. But I want to ask you, do you see yourself more like Larry or Frank?
So that's a question that I haven't actually been asked, and I'm really freaking shocked that I haven't been asked, because that is like the natural progression. So I actually decided not to plug myself into that story. I think I'm more in line with Frank now than I am with Larry. Younger, I was in line with Larry, but I kind of view them as two sides of the same coin. They're the two extreme paths that I could have followed. So Larry, of course, avoided everything. He bottled everything up and he tried to carve out a new life for himself without, you know, dealing with what happened. Frank, on the other hand, has spent his entire life wallowing in it. He's never been able to get away with it, never been able to come to terms with it, but he hasn't turned his back on it. And that's what's led him to repeat some of the sins of his father. And so we come into the place in the story where they're both kind of at a very pivotal point, and they have to make a decision on what path they're going to take, and they decide to take that path together. And so I think I'm more like Frank in the way that he handles some of it now, but I was definitely more like Larry before.
It's heartbreaking it's beautiful but also heartbreaking how you at the end fix their relationship. You feel for both of them. What
Absolutely.
You created with those two characters is that you gave your readers the possibility to empathize with characters. And this is not so common anymore. I mean,
absolutely.
Go please.
No, I know. I fully agree with you. I mean, a lot of books that I read, I don't really connect with a character on that level. And I think that, like I said, I mean, I really tried to take this. I was brutally honest about the things that my dad did. I mean, he was not a good man, but he's also not a cut and dry villain either. You know, he did some bad things, but in the end, you know, he still cared for me, and he was given a very bad hand in life, and he, you know, he didn't get a retry. He tried his best, but it didn't work out that way. And so I think the best piece of review I've ever gotten, I did an interview with Jody J. Sperling of the what is now TRBM. It was the Reluctant Book Marketer, but I was on TRBM, and he said Lee Glasscock does some really heinous things, but he's still the most likable character in the whole novel. And I think that that speaks legions, because I mean, Lee does some pretty terrible things in that novel, but from the get-go, I think that you understand him and you empathize with him. And even when he does those things, you know where what he's doing, why he's doing it, and where he's coming from.
Yeah, that's very clear. It's very clear when we start to go into the novel. When you reach page 50, more or less, so very early in your storytelling, you start to see that Lee is going to be a complicated character, a very tormented one, but you already know why.
Yeah.
You already saw what happened to him to turn him into the man he is. And I think the most heartbreaking thing about Lee is that he forces himself to turn off his emotions. He cut them off. Totally. But doing that, he goes against human nature, and nothing good can come out
Absolutely.
From that starting. But you can understand why he does what he does. So it's you cannot redeem him, at least at the beginning of the book, of course. But you have a good feeling that that character is going to be important and is going to teach you while you walk the path by his side.
Yeah.
So you really created characters that even in their darkness, you can empathize with. I
Absolutely.
Find a little bit harder to empathize with the female characters in the book, but you have an amazing perspective of
Absolutely.
What men can do in life, what kind of mistakes they can make in life, but you also have a good grasp on how a character in a book can redeem himself.
And that was the goal from the get-go. There's a scene, of course, in the end that takes place in the sunroom, and that's, you know, one of the most emotional scenes in the book. And I edited the book like maybe 9 times, and I got emotional reading every single time. That is my ultimate like catharsis moment. That is the moment that like personally like I would dream of. That would be what I would want. So I was as brutally honest with myself as I put words to page, everything that I would want to say to my own father, that kind of deal. So all of that scene is, you know, without giving away too much, is it's I think it's the most visceral in the novel. I mean, there's some really truly horrifying stuff in there, but the dynamic and the way that it breaks down, and I think that the piece that follows that moment is just, it really spoke to me 9 times. And I at the moment I put it out in the world, I hope that it would speak to others.
Yeah, it did. At least it did to me, but I'm sure your readers will get exactly what you were feeling while writing that scene. I think that scene is your most visceral voice.
Yeah, I think that it's, I think that that is a, I think that every good author should have a moment in their book where, you know, the walls break down. You're no longer, it's no longer characters on a page, but it's almost like you're speaking directly to someone in your life or to a situation, and you're just being as open and honest. 'Cause that is the scene that will turn a reader into a lifelong fan, first of all. And that's the scene that's going to change someone's life. That's like a huge thing for me. I wouldn't be who I am. I don't even know if I would still be here without books. Stephen King was a light in the darkness for me. Everybody loves Stephen King. Everybody, you know, puts him on the pedestal, and he's absolutely one of the best living authors, you know, today. But, you know, at the same time, I always try to check myself, you know, he was just like me at some point. You know, I can do this too. You know, I like to say he's overrated, but he's not really overrated. But
No.
I think that it's that, you know, every good author has a moment where they just that all the facade falls away, the mask of telling a story falls away, and the real world really shines through. And that was my specific moment in that novel for sure.
And it's clear that even if this is your first book, you already have a strong artistic voice.
Thank you.
It comes out very clearly. You know what you are doing. You know what really surprised me, I have to be honest, is the pacing of the book. You got it so right that at the beginning I was like, is this really his first book? Because
Thank you so much.
it's so clear, it's so well done. I mean, I come from a field in which pacing is everything. I'm a screenwriter, so
Yeah,
pacing is everything.
absolutely.
And when I was reading your book, the first thing I say to myself is that this is so good that it can be turned into a script without thinking even too much about the very difference between a
And
book and a script.
it's so funny that you say that, because I approach writing as like a hybrid experience. So books are fantastic, but every medium has its problems. And so I try to approach writing a little bit differently. I'm a huge fan of you know, series and movies. I grew up obsessing over different things, that kind of deal. And the renaissance that we've seen, especially in horror in the last 8 years, is fantastic. There's just so many amazing things coming out. And so I approach novel writing almost as like I'm writing a series. And you know, when I was a kid, I used to always dream up different scenarios of different shows that I was watching, that kind of deal too. And so I approach it almost in like episodic format, because it's like, okay, it's like you need your highs and your lows, your mountains and your valleys to keep the pacing going. So, and you want the reader to keep coming back from the chapter. And that's one thing that I've consistently gotten feedback on is some people say, oh yeah, I like the first part, and it was really good. I read it in a couple chunks. I'm like, and then I got to like about the 50% mark or the 75% mark, and I just read it in one sitting because I couldn't stop. And so that was one of the key things when I was writing it. And I did not do a lot of outlining in that book. I did a lot of winging it with that, because it was a passion project. I had no idea the morning that I woke up that I started it that I was going to write a book. It was a complete off the fly. I said, I need to put words to page and tell my dad's story just to give myself some peace. That was the whole goal in the beginning. And then from there, as I was developing this fictional story around it, I was like, holy hell, I might actually write a book. And I accomplished that. And then it took a lot of, you know, editing. I did most of the editing myself, which was a feat that I will never do again. It took a long time to get it where it's at, but it was a very closed door experience. And I'm glad that it turned out the way it did, but I'm never going to write like that again, because the reader's input is so important. And I've learned so much from just different people's, you know, things that they've told me, what they've connected with, that kind of deal. And so I've been kind of revamping that, you know. I think as artists, everybody likes to create their work and they want it to be theirs and their vision is the right vision. But I've been very self-aware to say that, you know, if someone has something to say, I need to hear it. It might not be right, or it might be the most right thing I've ever heard. So that's been something that I've really taken to heart too, and so it's been a wild ride for sure.
But so glad that you took it, really. Very, very
Oh
glad.
yeah.
And what I love in your book is the closure you gave to your characters and from what you are saying yourself too. But
Yes.
it's clear it's clear in how you beautifully but brutally treated the story of the two brothers. And you gave them the closure they needed all their
Absolutely.
lives long.
Absolutely. And I think that it was very important for me too to do that. And it was very important I'm a huge fan of when stories bookend appropriately, when they call back to the beginning of a novel and everything just comes together like this nice little ribbon. So I always try to do that. I try to make sure that I close up all those little loose ends and I give the most satisfying ending that I would expect for the reader. And then from there, it was all about those characters and making sure they got to where they needed to be. And I think that the one character I would love to return to, of course, is Andy. Andy doesn't get much closer, but Andy, and I think that eventually one day I will return to him 100%. I always say that I'm not a huge fan of sequels, as someone who prefers standalone and is afraid of kind of diminishing the work that comes before. I kind of put myself at a severe disadvantage as a self-published author. Self-published authors that have series do great, great business, and so it's I'm kind of I'm almost hurting myself by having this stance, but I know that right now I don't have any stories that would be serialized, and I refuse to put out something that doesn't really that I pad and then I just try to milk people for. That's not what it's about. I've always said when I started writing, I said, and I decided to publish especially, I said, it's not really about the money. It's about finding the audience, getting the book out there, and realizing the dream itself. Anything else that comes is a good thing. And I think that's reflected because, I don't, I, there's no, it's not really a happy ending in the book, obviously. It's very bittersweet, and I focus on getting the characters where they need to be, not where you want them to be, I guess is where I'm trying to bring this back around. And I think that was something that really spoke to a lot of people because they didn't expect that, and it's very different.
Yeah, it was, and it was a very pleasant surprise. It's clear that you, as an author, listen to the story your characters want to tell your readers.
Yes, absolutely.
You don't bend the knee to the market or to the critical thinking that every book deserves a happy ending or a tragedy ending. No. Bittersweet endings are usually what people want to read because it's what happens in real life.
Absolutely. And I think that something that I really, really enjoyed with that novel. And I always like to say that I look like I'm smarter than I am. I think my subconscious is smarter than I am because there's so many different moving pieces. And I'm discovering that with my second book as I get it ready to be published with a small publisher. There's so many things, so many nuances that as I developed it, I didn't consciously think of, but I'm discovering along the way. And one of those things is the telling my father's lens through our story through the lens of this ghost story. It's all metaphor for how our past haunts us, obviously. The seeing his mother and the different things that he struggles with all comes back to the way that our trauma just refuses to let go of us. And that is a really great metaphor that I was pretty aware of that one starting out, but when I was rereading it for the ninth time, I was like, wow, I really this theme persevered throughout very well. And I didn't have to do a lot of developmental editing. I didn't have to do a lot of work on it. I just told the story the way that it wanted to be told. I don't know if you're familiar. Have you ever heard of Malice House by Megan Shepherd?
Yes.
That whole shindig about that book is exactly the experience that I had writing everything I've written. Feels like you're channeling something versus actually creating a story. You're telling a story that exists, and you're the only person that's heard it. And that's very much what my experience of writing has been across the board.
It's clear in your in this book it's clear and it's beautiful because you can feel it. You literally can feel it. And my compliments, really, really, because
thank you. Yeah. It was, I was really nervous to put it out, obviously. I mean, there's a lot of my personal life and a lot of myself in my book. And I sell a lot of books through our work. I work as a pharmacy technician at a small independent local pharmacy. So they let me sell it there for no cost out of their pocket. They just run it through the register and pay me once a month for it, which is excellent. They give me the full cut. So that obviously has given me a lot of money to be able to, you know, do different promotional things, that kind of deal. And that's been really good. I've, you know, invested money in different softwares, different things, and really gotten to expand my knowledge and my resources. But when I decided to sell it there, I was definitely nervous because I was like, you know, this, first of all, my clientele is mostly older and I say the F-bomb a lot in my book because my book is, it's very slice of life. The characters, they're not rich and they're not predominantly poor either. They're just your traditional, I would argue, middle-class people that fall in tragedy across the board from one generation to the next. That's exactly what occurs to all of them. And so it's just very, you know, that's something that I'm familiar with in life. So it's in there. And I've only had one person have a problem with anything that I said. And I think that that speaks a lot since I've sold like 300 books and through there in, you know, a year's time. So everybody's come back, said great things and been really supportive. And I, you know, it really caught me off guard. I guess I underestimated, you know, the readership at my disposal, but it's made me feel really confident with my next book. And I'm nervous with that one too, with it having a little bit of a darker subject matter, even darker than this, but I think it'll be a great, great thing to get another one out there, especially one with a different tone. And it just kind of stands on its own.
Yeah. That's we can't wait, honestly. Because now that
awesome.
Now that I read the first book and I really want to read the second one because honestly it's so good, so I'm ready for your new one. I'm ready for
your awesome. New I will absolutely keep you updated. It should definitely be out in May, and I'm so excited for it. One of the things when I set out to write it, we talked about the theme a little bit before we started recording, of course, but I was really disillusioned with humanity, and I saw how ugly it's become in the last 10 years. And I was really inspired by abuse of power, about people who abuse their station in life, whether it's an elected official or from a religious standpoint, how they manipulate people and bring out the worst in people for their own means to an end. And so I was really inspired by that. And the other thing that is prevalent throughout that novel is I wanted to pull the rug out from under my reader. I went through a string of reading novels, and I was reading, I read Joe Hill's Nosferatu, which is a fantastic novel. I love that novel. Did not like it when I first read it because I thought something was going to happen and they red herringed me, and I was disappointed because it was going to break the mold and it was going to be unexpected. And so I said, you know what, I'm going to go in on this novel. I'm going to just really just capture the unexpectedness of life. And so there's a lot of carnage, a lot of death, and a lot of just crazy plot twists in that novel. But that's everybody, all my beta readers that read it really enjoyed it. It's got the same kind of diverse cast, like a large cast that is coming together, and it's based in a small town. And I can't wait for people to read it because I think that it's a definite, I always like to compare it almost in scope to Stephen King's The Stand, but it's not nearly that bad. It's just a larger novel than this one with a lot more characters.
Well, I mean, we already had a real The Stand in life in 2020. Yeah. So yeah, let's
exactly. Yeah.
Let's not have a new one so soon. Even if,
for sure, yeah.
Even if 2024 is another leap year, and here in Italy it's bad luck. So
yeah,
we don't
definitely
say
avoid any, it.
We don't say anything else about that. But
yep.
Honestly, if you want to honor us with your presence again with your new book, we will
absolutely.
Be more than happy to have you. And who
100%.
Knows? Hopefully Zoe will be able to join us because
yes.
The baby will be a little bit older, and so let's
yeah.
hope. But thank you so much for connecting
yeah.
with me, and thank you for your book because it's a good
for
one.
Sure. Thank you for taking time to read it and for having me on the show. If you're interested in updates, and anybody listening is interested in updates, go to my website, williamfgrayfiction.com. You can sign up to my email list there, and I'm actually giving away the first part of the novel for free, along with a short story prequel to The Man Behind the Door that kind of explains one of the little mysteries I left unraveled, and then something that I refer to as the man behind the door, which is just an op-ed describing some of the events that my father and I had. Some of the more positive things, I think, really, and just to kind of shed light on the kind of man that he was, beyond the complex bad stuff, really. So, all those things you get for free once you sign up. It's super easy, and there's some really cool stuff in there.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
I'm sure the readers will be happy to know that, and for sure I will be happy to go and sign up because honestly, you can be one of my favorite new authors of
Really,
2023.
thank you
So
so much. That means so much to me. Thank you.
thanks to you. Thank you for being here and for sharing with us how you feel about your book and why you wanted to write your book. Thank you
Oh, yeah.
again. And if you don't have anything else you want to say,
I think we are good. Thank you guys all for your time, but especially thank you, Kim.
thank you for listening and see you next episode. Bye bye.